Alrighty, so before we get started today, any questions about what you have due on Friday? You are aware you have stuff due on Friday, I hope. Okay. No questions at all.
Yeah, I have a question about the drawings.
Yes.
So how complicated do you want these drawings, or how simple can they be?
So the question, now I'll reiterate so it's on their audio. The question is, how good do the drawings need to be? How complex do they need to be? Our general answer to that is they need to be good enough that your reader can understand the functionality of the design. And that's kind of across the board. That's from here on out. That doesn't mean it needs to be a fancy CAD render, right? And then quite often a fancy CAD render does not effectively communicate how the thing would actually work. Right. So that's the measure. They do need to be computer generated in some way. Right. We don't want hand-drawn sketches. We don't want handwritten anything in this class. Okay. But the ultimate measure is, can I understand the functionality of this design by the drawings and text you've provided us? That's the measure of, is it good enough? No. So abstract doesn't count. Figures, tables, drawings, references section don't count. So the 2-page max limit you have for this report is 2 pages of body text. Yes, sir?
So the design reports we're doing for this tower are far simpler than like the final project reports you posted. Can we still like base it off of that?
So the question, hey, this report's kind of simple compared to a full design report. That's right. But yes, most of the same information applies, right? The abstract still needs to summarize what's in the report, including the key results, and be unique to your spaghetti report, right? The drawings need to have parts labeled according to their function. They need to have enough dimensions to have scale. They need to be good enough so I can understand the functionality, and in this case, the kind of structure of your tower. Right? You better not have any first person or narrative structure. Talk about the design process chronologically. Right? So all those same things come into play. Yeah, all the things we talked about a week ago in that series of lectures on last Tuesday. Those notes are all posted. There's also a video of those couple lectures, an earlier version of those on the last website if you wanted to look through that, like a screencast of those. Okay. There is also that pre-submission checklist that has kind of nice bullet point actual check boxes there you can run down and check off that you're getting it all right before you turn it in. We strongly recommend you do that. Other questions? I knew there were some out there. Okay. So a week ago we talked about writing. That's one part. You had to write some instructions. You're having to do some technical writing. So you learned about that. You also had to do some design in terms of designing your spaghetti tower. In this class, Introduction to Mechanical Design. So the first real phase of that we're going to talk about today. Right, this kind of objective design process we're going to be marching through. And moving away from, designing things from our gut. Kind of gut feeling, we think this is going to work. Right, we don't want to do that. And we don't want to design by just trial and error. Right, both of those things lead to a lot of wasted effort, a lot of wasted time, a lot of wasted money, all of which are bad things. Let's first talk about the phases of design. Okay, we're going to call the first phase of design problem understanding. And I would argue that this is probably the most important phase of the design process. If you don't understand the problem you're trying to solve, you could generate a really good design that solves the wrong problem. And in that sense, it's not a really good design any longer. Okay? Once we understand the problem, we'll start from that understanding. We're going to develop specifications, engineering specs, functional specs that the design has to satisfy. Okay? From those specifications, we're going to start doing the part where most people probably think of design, sketching ideas based on those specifications. Okay? We need to try to hold off on forming opinions about designs, thinking about what design would be better or worse, until we get to step 3. That's really hard to do. But you want to try to push it off and make sure you're always working hard to better understand the problem, better understand what specifications you need to fulfill with the design to satisfy your customer needs. Okay. So those are kind of first three phases. What you have in conceptual design is also kind of concept evaluation and selection of what we might want to go to market with, what we might want to develop further. Right? So out of the conceptual design phase, typically a functional concept is selected. Right? And then you do detailed design on those one or two or three functional concepts, where the detailed design is figuring out exactly what the details are. Okay, we're going to need this exact model motor, which means it's this size. We need this wiring. We need this gearbox. So the detailed design is figuring out the details of the design. Okay. From that, you can develop production specifications. The thing gets built. And then it also needs to be disposed of. And increasingly, and I think certainly in our lifetimes, it's going to become even more so, companies are responsible for products they produce. They have to take them back in and recycle them or dispose of them in some way. And that's also that is the case in much of Europe right now, in the EU. Okay, so if you think about kind of your course progression here, your curriculum, you might think about kind of 4 and 5 be some of the stuff you might see in machine design. Analysis of the detailed designs, structure analysis, right? Certainly manufacturing, we have a manufacturing course, of course, right? What we're going to talk about are really the first three steps, okay? So through the conceptual design phase. And in fact, if you're a final project, what you're reporting on, what you're delivering, even though you've kind of built it, is a concept, right? You're not going to get to a detailed design that you could hand off to some manufacturer and they just make for you. Right? Think about it as you're effectively building a prototype of a concept. Right? So we're really getting through the first three steps. Okay. And then once you kind of will do what we're doing here, you just select the best concept or the best one or two concepts and develop them further. Okay. And the design process almost starts over at that point. You've narrowed down what you think is a good idea, and you start iterating on that good idea. Okay. And the big point we'll make, and you'll probably get tired of me saying this, is this entire process is iterative. Right? So I don't understand the problem and then forget about that and just move on to step 2 in developing specifications. We should always be revisiting our understanding of the problem, refining our specifications, right? Refining our concepts. Always, 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 right? You're going to work on a project in your career for multiple years sometimes, right? You're going to know way more about the problem. You're going to understand the problem way better 1 year in than you did 1 week in. So if you're designing a product based on your 1 week understanding, if you haven't revisited the problem, then you have a problem, okay? So we can think about, in terms of this, we really want to iterate. We want to loop through kind of 1, 2, 3. On that conceptual design process. And that's really what we're doing here. Looping through 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Okay. Out of that process comes your best concepts, your best ideas, and then there's kind of another design iteration subloop that happens here, where you're looking at detailed design and production specifications, those kind of things. Okay. And then, of course, your company in the bigger picture better be looping through all of this. Even once you have a product on the market, even if you're the market leader on a product, you better be trying to understand that problem better, understand what your customers want from your product better, and making it better. Or else you're not going to be the market leader for very long. Okay. So this is not just do the 7 steps and you're done with it. You're always looping on all these steps. Okay. And as a reminder, what we're trying to do is go from the top of this post-it note to the bottom. Right. So we want to spend some time really understanding the problem before you do the conceptual design, and then move into detailed design and manufacture. Okay. Questions so far about the kind of the design process, those steps? Yes, sir.
Doesn't disposal kind of go into the design process?
Doesn't disposal go into the design process? Yes. Right. You should be considering, and we'll talk about design for X a little bit later in the semester. That could be, and that will be, and all of those things will come into play when we start thinking about customers and what's required of design from that perspective. Okay, so let's talk about that. The first question you should ask yourself when you're trying to understand the problem you're solving is, who's the customer? Okay, and we mean, when we say customer here, we don't mean necessarily who's buying this off the shelf at Target or wherever. Okay? We mean customer and who has some vested interest in how this product performs, how this product functions, how this product is made or disposed of. Okay, so who's a customer in that sense? Who cares about this product? Okay, so that very well could be the end user, the person that buys it off the shelf at Target or whatever. Okay, who else is a customer in the process of a generic product? Could be a customer. What's that? The stores themselves, right? The reseller. Target is a customer of your product that they are selling, right? They want it to take up a certain amount of shelf space, right? They need some kind of packaging to fit into their shipping. They need to fit into their shipping process, all those kind of things. They want it to sell, so they can make money off of it as well. They care about what that product looks like, right? Who else? Secondhand owner. Yeah, that might still fall in end user. Manufacturer, for sure, right? They care what that product looks like, what it's going to cost them to make it. They're trying to make money off of it as well, right? Your design, we'll have a lab a little bit later that sees, we'll see where that part of that customer can really be a driving factor in product design. What it's going to take to actually get it made and hit a certain price point, for example. Who else? Other designers, perhaps, yeah.
Shipping
companies, right?
Your boss,
your company in general. How about your company sales team? Right, they probably care. One sec. Right, they probably care. They're the ones going to have to go out and sell this to Target. Right? Yeah.
People with the product effects.
So, yeah, maybe not the person that's directly using it, but the people in the environment around the product, perhaps. Yeah. Right. So that list of who a customer could be for any given product is really long, generally. Okay. Make asking that question an explicit part of your process. So that question really becomes, who are the customers, almost always? All right? Are all those customers going to want the same thing from your product? No chance, right? So they're going to have conflicting needs. Are those customers going to do a great job of telling you what they really want? Generally not. All right? So they're not going to do a job of telling you what they really want. And the quote, the kind of famous quote attributed to Henry Ford, if I had listened to what my customer said, I would have built a faster horse. Right? So the point there being, right, that's his customers were asking for a faster horse, but really what they wanted was to get from point A to point B faster and more efficiently. So you have to do the same thing. Right? You have to listen to what your customer's telling you and try to distill out of that what they're really asking you for. One tool we're going to use to do this is the House of Quality, which is a part of quality function deployment, which first showed up in this article in the Harvard Business Review. Okay, it's developed from a study of the Kobe shipyards, shipbuilding shipyards. Right. So this time, it was the Japanese economy everyone was scared of, not the Chinese economy. They were taken over. And the Kobe shipyards had a much higher kind of reported customer satisfaction than most U.S. shipyards at the time. Right, so this led to that study of the Kobe shipyard. And they were using a process like this to identify what their customer wants from their product and then design it. So let's talk about this House of Quality. And we'll begin by talking about quality function deployment. It's really a planning tool. And it's trying to map what my customers need, what my customer wants are to actually product specifications. And formalizing that process. Okay? What it's going to do for us is establish where our time should be spent. If we know what our customer wants and what's most important to our customer, it makes sense, but that's where we should spend our most effort. Okay? Just as importantly, it tells us where we shouldn't be spending time and effort. Things that are not important to our customers. Right? And again, these things that we're saying are important to our customers are not just what our customer told us, it's what we distilled out of our aggregate customer as being important. And so QFD, despite being kind of a quality in the name, is not kind of a quality control. It's not after the process. This is the on the front end. And really the objective is to, you know, like our post-it notes, something kind of like this. This is a design process, just kind of a rough conceptual chart that you don't want to follow. Right? I get a design problem, and I start making design changes or design decisions right away. Right? And those ramp up, horizontal axis of time, ramp up as I'm entering production, and start coming down a little bit. Things go to production, and oh wow, this is not really going to work. Right? So then you have a ton of changes after production begins. The farther right you get on this plot, the more expensive those changes become. Okay, particularly once you cross that dashed line. Right? What you really want is something like this. I may be making near zero changes out here at the beginning, and I want to be making near zero changes out here when I'm starting production as well. Okay. But what this curve requires is really understanding the problem you're trying to solve and doing a good job of addressing the customer needs. The house of quality. It's called that because it looks like a house a little kid might draw. Okay. Like a lot of the tools in this class we talk about, we're going to say a lot of the utility, a lot of the usefulness of this design tool is in the process of completing it, not the numbers that would pop out the end of it. Okay. All these tools, nearly all these tools, will give you some numbers you can look at. Okay. And they can be useful. It's much more useful, I think much more useful, the thought process of thinking clearly about what's going on within the tool as you complete it. Right? And the idea is you have to think clearly about the process, what your customer is asking of you, the characteristics of the design as you're completing the tool. That will clarify your thinking as a designer. And yeah, of course, you can get some numbers out at the end if you want to. Okay. We mentioned this whole process is iterative. That also means that most of the design tools, the house of quality included, that we talk about are something like a living document. Right, it's always being updated. Okay, and in fact, breaking out your house of quality for your design project, you know, particularly when you get to your final project, is a great way to start every group meeting you have. Okay, is the problem the same we thought it was when we started? What do we all know now we didn't know when we did the last version of this house of quality? Does that change anything else in our process? What did we get wrong last time we looked at this 2 weeks ago, or whatever? It's a great way to focus everyone in the meeting on what's really important, what we need to be concentrating effort on. Let's start with the middle part of the house of quality, which you'll see called the problem understanding form. So it looks something like this. On this left-hand column, we're going to have all our customer requirements, right? And those are kind of the understanding of our aggregate customer. Right? When we have that list of customers, they're probably going to want different stuff. We have to look at that and think clearly about who those customers are and how important they are to the final the success of the final product and kind of reconcile those in some way. Right? So there's a lot of work that goes into that before you even begin filling out the house of quality. But once you have that list, those all go here. Okay? And this list should get very long. Okay? All the things my customer cares about for a product. That's the horizontal, that's the leftmost column. Each one of those also gets an importance associated with it. All those characteristics, all those things your customer are telling you about are not of equal importance to the customer. Okay? So you need to indicate that. Yeah. What goes across the top row there, are engineering characteristics. Those are measurable characteristics of a design. One way to think about this, what these things are, is given a list of customer requirements that you have. If someone took a solution to this problem, proposed solution to this problem, and sat it on the table in front of you, what could you measure about it? What would you need to measure about it to know whether it satisfies the customer requirements or not? Okay, I'll repeat that. It's a big one. Engineering characteristics, they're measurable things or testable things. given a list of customer requirements. If someone sat a design in front of you that they said was going to fulfill all those customer requirements, what would you need to measure or test about it to know whether it did or not? That goes there. That list of measurements and tests. Those are engineering characteristics. They're characteristics of the design. Things I can measure about the design. Things I can test about the design to know whether it's meeting the customer requirements or not. We got that? That's an important one. All right. And then we have this matrix in the middle that relates those two. Okay. So how do those measurable characteristics relate to the customer requirements? And you might have some that are kind of one-to-one. Right? Matrix will look, you know, this one's a really small one for kind of lecture style, textbook style one. So we have our list of customer requirements. And we're going to relate the relationship between the two as strong, medium, or weak. Okay? We're going to use a 1-3-9 scale. That 1-3-9 scale, we do that. This is going to force us to make a choice between medium and strong. Okay, you'll see it's kind of lots of psychological studies. If you had 0 to 4 there, everything ends up being a 2 or 3. Right, where 1-3-9 forces you to think about it and make a clear distinction between something that's kind of middle ground and something that's strong relationship. Okay. So let's take those relationships, and we have, say, our first customer requirement. And we're going to go across and take our first engineering characteristic and see, well, how are those two related? So, let's say, for example, I have a customer requirement for a smartphone. And my customer says, I want long battery life. Okay. And maybe your first engineering characteristic is measured battery capacity, how many milliamp hours the battery is. Okay. That's something I can measure about the design to know whether it's meeting my customer requirement of long battery life. Okay, so I look at those two and, hey, that's probably a pretty strong correlation. So I mark that as a strong correlation. Okay. And I keep marching through the table and filling out for every kind of pairing of customer requirement and engineering characteristic, I think about what their relationship is. Okay. And you end up with a table. It's much bigger than this, but looks something like this. It's much larger. Okay? Questions so far? Yes, sir?
The blank space just like absolutely no relationship?
Exactly right. So the house of quality can have blank spaces. These things are not related at all. Other question? I think I saw another hand. Same question, yeah. So house of quality can have blank spaces. In the middle part. Yes, sir?
What would be like a medium to weak correlation with battery life?
So, let's see. We have so you could do screen brightness. So, medium correlation, maybe screen contrast. Not necessarily brightness, because brightness is kind of changeable, right? So, screen contrast has a medium relationship to battery life. With me so far on the process, otherwise. Okay. And again, I think a lot of the utility of this is thinking really, really clearly about what these things are. Thinking really clearly and hard about what these things are. And then, okay, what's the relationship between those two things? Some points before we move on. We're going to do, and I'm going to show you a method that basically just kind of lists these and then fill them in. What you generally would like to do is kind of group these by related items, if you can, particularly as your house of quality gets larger. It'll help you see trends in the design. For the house of quality, what you want to look for, kind of some first things that maybe are going right or wrong for you, we'll discuss, are blank rows. We said there can be blank cells within the house of quality. What if you have an entirely blank row? What does that mean for what you're looking at right so far? Exactly right. So I have some customer requirement, and nothing I'm measuring can or does tell me about whether I'm satisfying that customer requirement or not. And that's important because, we're, as you're going to see in a second, we're going to use these engineering characteristics to drive our design process and development of specifications. Okay. So if we don't have a characteristic there, we're not going to have a spec that tells us whether we're meeting those requirements or not. So an empty row in a house of quality is a problem. All right. So we have a customer need that's not being addressed if we have an empty row. Okay. What about a blank column? What does that tell us? Measuring something that doesn't need to be measured, and I'm measuring something that, you know, put another way, maybe my customer doesn't care about. Yeah, I guess maybe you can think about where it's kind of over-designed. We're doing things that don't matter to my customer, which could indicate we're wasting time and energy or both or whatever. So the question was, let me see if I can paraphrase that. But what happens, my customer, you said, doesn't know what he or she wants, right? Remember, these are what you have decided that your customer really is asking for, right? So in that case, you said these things do matter, right? It's not just what your customers are telling you they want. This is your understanding, your analysis, your aggregate customer, what requirements the product needs to satisfy to be successful, in other words. Question? I think you can measure appearance in a lot of ways. You can look at symmetry. You can look at measures of the color and size. You can do tests on appearance. You can do focus groups on customers. All right, so there are ways that it's not just pure with a ruler measurement. You can think of tests to get at a measurement of aesthetically pleasing or whatever. So blank columns kind of our problem too. Okay, we're doing something that we've said it doesn't matter to my customer, is effectively what that's saying. Okay. Excuse me. We, of course, can get some numbers. As I said, we can look at technical importances. And basically, we want to take the relationship ranking, that 1, 3, or 9, multiply it by the importance, and then sum by the whole column. Okay. And we could take a relative importance looking at the sum of all those absolute importances across the columns, and effectively get a percentage importance of each engineering characteristic. And we'll walk through that in just a second. And the kind of important point here is we don't want to use just the numbers as justifications for anything, right? The numbers are only evidence and only as trustworthy as the amount of work and thought we've put into filling out the table. So, our first column on this really simple and small house of quality, I have a strong relationship, so 9 times 5 plus 9 times 9 plus 3 times 2, I get 132 for that column, summing along the column. If I do that for every column, hey, that sum across all those absolute importances is 300. Okay? Well, then I can get some relative importance by dividing each one of these guys by 300. Okay. So you get some, you can think about this relative importance of kind of this is a 44% important or something like that. Okay. So this can kind of should really just be justifying at this point if you've thought clearly about all the, what all these things are, but can justify, hey, this first engineering characteristic, we really need to focus on that. It's really important in terms of satisfying my customer requirements. These importances, right? So this is how important each customer requirement is. Questions about that? Yes, sir.
Those importances, are they based on comparing them to the other ones, or just kind of what you think, 1 to 10?
These will be 1 to 10. Yeah. We'll learn, I think it's a week from today, about some tools to help you kind of objectively get at what these are rather than guessing. Okay, so other questions? Sorry. All right, so let's take a few minutes and do a little exercise. You've had one design problem so far, Spaghetti Tower. Let's take a minute just where you are. Think about what the customers of that Spaghetti Tower were. And then just list, you don't have to draw out a house of quality yet, but list what you think the key customer requirements were. And perhaps engineering characteristics that would have helped you measure whether a Spaghetti Tower is meeting those customer requirements or not. And then we'll bounce around and chat with you and come back together and maybe compile an aggregate list for the class. Okay, it looks like most of you have given up on me already. Perhaps I prompted that by switching the slide. Who are the customers?
Build team.
Build team. That's kind of an obvious one. They're actually the ones building your tower. Anybody else? Me? And you can think of that kind of as the rule governing body of that contest, maybe. Maybe we can turn that future. Maybe. Anybody else? Yeah, you were your own customer, and that'll be true for a lot of what we do in this class, right? You guys hopefully care about how well your tower did, what your tower looks like, what your final project design, how it functions and works. Right? Same would be true for kind of senior design when you get there. Like, you're going to care about that. Right? So, the design team. Anybody else? In the context of this project, that's probably it, I think. Right? You guys care, again, hopefully, about what your team... tower functions like, how it works, right? We set the rules for you, so we kind of have some interest in that, right? The build team cares how easy it is to build and things, right? And then maybe some future students. They might see your tower on Flickr and get good ideas or something, okay? So once we figured out who my customers are, we want to look at each one of these customers and think about them, and you can think about them independently, is the way I like to do this. Go down the list of customers. What does this customer really care about for this product? Okay. So let's do that. We'll take first what does the build team care about? Okay, I heard ease of construction. Maybe build time. Was that? I still didn't hear. Height. Yep. Sorry. What about the materials? Material use. Is the tape weight a customer requirement? Tape length. Okay, I'll ask the same question then. Is the tape length a customer requirement? Are they requiring, hey, tape length? What do we, they might care something about the tape, but I don't, tape, what are they really asking? Tape. Right, so Same thing, right? Could be, right? We're refining a little bit, but I like to just list these and then come back and refine.
Base area less than 8.5.
Sure. Fits in. What else does the build team care about? Sure. Error, not effort. What about stability? What do you mean by that? Sure. I ask because I'm a controls guy, and stability means something very different to me, which you'll find out about when you get there, probably. Okay, so this is a good beginning list. And there are actually probably more, which we'll get to in a second. Okay. Let's move down. Let's think design team next. What is the design team? What does the design team require of this tower as a product? Right? Clarity of instructions, perhaps. It's a lot of the same stuff, right? So that's a nice, that's a good thing for your product. You've got two customers and they care about a lot of the same stuff. That's a good thing. Makes things easy for you, right? So let's see if we can copy some of these. Well, that's probably it. Percent of ball. Material use, these are actually kind of clarifications on that, right? So we could include those. Okay, so let's ask this a slightly different way. Is there anything the design team cares about that we didn't address for the build team?
The grade.
The grade, maybe, yeah. If you think about it as a class product project rather than a design. I'm going to encourage you not to do that, but sure, I'll take it for now.
It's only got to be stable enough long enough for it to be measured.
Sure. So, we actually, that's probably something the build team cares about too, right? Sure. So, reproducibility. How so? Is that a property of the design, though? Right. So when we say simplicity, really what we're saying is a simple design. Or design I put the last part in caps because I want you guys to remember that. Senior design teams in particular love this part, but always forget that. And you start removing features and things your customer cares about, it's no longer solving the problem you set up to solve. Right. So remember the second half of that statement. Okay. What else design teams care about? Anything?
Instructions.
What's that?
Clear instructions.
Clear instructions. So probably there's clarity of instruction. We have instruction clarity. Right. And that's actually, if you think about that, it probably relates to the design itself. So there's some property of the design that makes it easy to explain how to build it. Right, so there's some relationship there. That's probably something you maybe should have thought of as a designer. Hey, I could build this really intricate tower that supports the tennis ball really high, but there's no way I can write instructions for someone to build that easily within 45 minutes. Right? Okay. And there's probably plenty more of those. Instruction length, and yeah, so we'll come back to those in a minute. What do we care about? Again, a lot of the same stuff, right? All those rule, the kind of basic line rules we care about, right? We're the rules officials. So build time, support tennis ball. Stable long enough to be measured. Was that? Did I miss that one? Oh, yeah, I did. Sorry. I sure did. I care about that too. Was that? Yeah, so maybe we care about that too. That's something different from either of your teams. I say a clean build, maybe. Yeah, I mean, we have some deadlines, right? We're kind of setting those deadlines. Yeah, we might have some other guidelines outside the design. So I think there's also one thing of when you're thinking about these. Again, I tend to just list all of these things that I kind of come up with. This is a kind of stereotypical brainstorming part of this process. And then go back and refine them. So let's kind of do that part of the process. Okay. Let's think about, go back to our build team. Okay. And we say our build team has some customer requirements of ease of construction. Right. And I want to rephrase that as an actual requirement. Right? Ease of construction is not a requirement. It's that the device is easy to construct is more of a requirement. Right? And even that, though, that's a little bit ambiguous. What does it mean for a spaghetti tower to be easy to construct, easy to build?
Easy to understand instructions.
Okay, so that might mean it has something to do with instruction clarity. What else might it mean?
That the spaghetti comes together in a way that the angles don't make it difficult to wrap it.
Sure, so. angle of joints. How can we maybe word that more generally?
Simplistic design.
So something about, if it's easy to, if it's kind of a simple design, it might be easier to build, maybe, yeah. Yeah, maybe. Geometry. Something like that. Right, so build time probably factors into some kind of emotional response to whether it was hard or not, or stressful. Right? Okay. In general, and we'll talk more about it shortly, but, you know, easy to use or something like that can show up as a customer requirement on pretty much any product on the planet. Right? But what matters is what it means, what easy to use means in the context of the product you're working on. Right? So easy to build here might be the geometry of the noodles. Right? That doesn't come up when you're building a house, the geometry of your spaghetti noodles. Right, but they both come from kind of the same place of easy to build. Right, and if you just have easy to build there, you don't capture that nuance. Right? And that's what you want to do. Right? You want to get at, hey, my user said they want it to be easy to build. What does that really mean for them in the context of this problem? My user said they want this product to be safe. Again, that's a customer requirement. Every product on the planet, just about. What does that mean in the context of this problem we're working on? If you're designing a chainsaw, you want it to be safe. But a safe chainsaw means something different than a safe water bottle. They both should be safe in some way. Right? But if you just have safe as a customer requirement, you're not capturing that information. You need to think about what those kind of things mean in the context of the problem you're actually trying to solve. Right? So what we want to do at this part of the process is go through every one of these things now that we thought of, and what do they mean in the context of this problem? What is my user really asking for when they say they want the tower to be easy to build? Or they want the instructions to be clear? Right? For clear instructions, do you mean you want the language and the English to be correct? Do you want clear figures? Do you want it short and concise? Do you want all of those things? Most likely. Right? So what happens is if you have these high-level requirements that you've kind of identified, they turn into three or four ones once you think about them in more detail that are specific to the problem you're actually solving right now. Okay. Be safe. Right? That could turn into 10 different requirements, 20 different requirements in the context of a given problem. Right? And you need to identify each one of those individually. And we'll see the importance of that comes up later when we go to come to evaluate a design. Because we're going to use these same criteria we develop here to evaluate which design is best, which one best satisfies my customer requirements. Okay, the next step of this process, once you have that clarified list, right? What I tend to do, you have a clarified list for each customer, then you need to reconcile somehow who's more important and things like that. Right? Projects like this, projects in this class, your senior design project, there's a lot of overlap between your various customers generally. Right? So that's going to be a fairly easy compromise for you to navigate. Once you have that kind of aggregate customer, you want to go through each one of your refined customer requirements of that aggregate customer and say, what could I measure about a design, any given design, to know whether I'm satisfying this customer requirement or not? So here's a few easy ones, right? I have a customer requirement, and your aggregate customer is probably going to have that because all three of the ones we just talked about had it, that you use less than 4 ounces of spaghetti noodles. What could I measure about a tower to know whether I satisfied that customer requirement or not? I could measure the number of strands of spaghetti. I could measure, I could weight directly, right? And maybe I want to look at both of those things. Both of those give me some information about whether I used less than 4 ounces of spaghetti or not. Okay. Kind of same thing with tape. I can measure how much it takes to build that tower. Right. Does it fit on a letter-sized piece of paper? Well, I could measure length and width. I can measure the footprint. Right? Those are two separate engineering characteristics now that come out of the base fitting on a leather-sized piece of paper. Right? So go down your list of customer requirements and think about what do I need to measure or test about the design to know whether I'm satisfying this customer requirement. Okay, you guys with me on that? All right. And quite often, you'll have, I need to measure 2 or 3 or 5 things about a design to know whether I really satisfy one customer requirement. Okay. Okay. So let's go back over here. Oops, too far. So, if we've done that exercise, what we've had is filled out this customer requirements part, and then we would have filled out the engineering characteristics part. Okay, so here it is in the context of the whole house of quality. Now let's look at this kind of roof part of the house of quality. It's called the correlation matrix. What this is going to tell you is all the things that you can measure about a design, how are they related to one another? So, Let's just zoom in on that roof part. We have each one of our engineering characteristics. Again, measurable things about our design. Mass of spaghetti used. Number of strands used. Length of tape used. Right? Those are measurements about that design. Those are all listed here, those engineering characteristics. Okay. For each one of those engineering characteristics, you can identify, right, the direction you think it needs to be improved in order to make the design better. Okay. So let's back away from our spaghetti tower a little bit, and let's go back to maybe our smartphone example. Right. My customer says, I want all-day battery life, long battery life. Okay. And we said, hey, the first engineering characteristic maybe to think about that I can measure about that phone to address that is the actual capacity of the battery. So battery capacity in milliamp hours. Okay. And I want to increase that as much as I can in order to better satisfy the customer requirement that it has long battery life. Okay. My customer might also ask for a small smartphone. These ones now are too big. I want it to fit in my pocket better. Whatever. So then I can have the total volume, smartphone volume, is a measurement of that, not volume like sound, volume is solid. Right? And I want to make that volume as small as I can. Well then, what I want to do here is look at this first engineering characteristic. How does it affect this second? If I push the battery capacity measured in milliamp hours, higher, which is my goal there, how does that affect my ability to push this engineering characteristic to have a smaller volume? Anybody?
Negative.
Yeah. It's going to have a negative impact on that. Okay. So what we want to look at for each one of these is if I push this engineering characteristic, this measurement closer to what we think the ideal of that measurement is, how does that affect my ability to push this towards its ideal? Okay. And you march through the table that way. What does this identify for us? What to maximize, minimize, maybe. Yeah, so I might have a characteristic, say, if I bump this really up, it affects all these other things negatively. Well, then that kind of tells you in a somewhat objective way, I better be really careful if I start bumping this one up and pushing this closer to its goal. It's going to negatively impact a lot of things. Or you can see the opposite. If I push engineering characteristic, this third one up towards its goal, it positively affects a bunch of other ones. So I might want to focus some of my effort there because it has effects not just in this characteristic, but a bunch of other ones, positive effects. Makes it easier for me to satisfy other goals. And the way you kind of map that out is by having kind of plus and minus throughout this table. Yes, sir?
How are you reading this?
So you can take this guy, he goes up this way, and where do these two intersect? So that's if I push this towards its goal, it negatively impacts my ability to push it towards its goal. So the direction of these arrows matter, right? Am I getting closer to my goal? Am I getting closer to this goal if I push this one toward its goal? No, I'm going the other way. And you march through every engineering characteristic pair that way. And again, you can start seeing, you can look down engineering characteristic and see, well, that one has a lot of strong positive correlations associated with it, I can focus some energy there and have a positive impact across the entire design. Okay. House of quality, tips and hints. As we said, you need to explicitly identify who your customers are. And again, customers in terms of who cares about the product. Right? For much of what you're doing here, what you're doing senior design, what you're doing in your academic career, for sure, you are going to be a customer too. list, just like we did in class. Just list out, brainstorm everything you think those customers care about. Okay? And then go back and take each point on that list and try to expand. What are we really asking for? What do we really mean by that point when we say we want they're demanding clear instructions? Okay? In other words, what does the customer really want when they tell us they need clear instructions? Reliable is another one of these things that can show up on kind of every house of quality on the planet. Well, what does the reliable mean in the context of the design you're working on? Does it mean that it's up 99.99% of the time? That's pretty reliable. And that's kind of how web servers are measured, right? Uptime. Right? Or does reliable mean you can use it incorrectly and it still keeps working okay? That's kind of reliability. Maybe. And we talk through easy to use, right? Easy to use could show up on pretty much every house quality on the planet. What does it mean in the context of the problem you're working on? Does it mean there's a low number of steps to use it? Does it mean it takes low physical effort to actually use it? Does it mean it's just easy to understand how to use it? Does it mean all of those things? Once you have that list of really refined customer requirements, take each one of those. And what do I need to measure to know whether I'm satisfying that customer requirement or not? Somebody came up and set a design on the table in front of me. What would I need to measure or test about it to understand whether it's satisfying what my customer wants or not? Okay. And then we want to make sure we revisit this regularly. All right, so we talked about this being a living document, an iterative process. And you look back at this all the time. Your final project, for example, we're going to have some intermediate contests. Right, those are great times to look back. Hopefully you're doing it more often than that, but those are great times to look back. Hey, what about our problem did we not quite understand correctly that led to this particular outcome? Okay, loop back through. Okay. Questions about the house of quality? You'll see, so the question, if I'm just only comparing positive correlation in pairwise, if you do that across the entire combinations, all the combinometrics, you should get a picture of the overall landscape of what's most important.
And that's only one sort of design consideration?
So when you're looking at the correlation matrix part, what that can tell you, again, is where you might could focus effort. So if you have one particular characteristic that has strong positive correlations to all the others, making improvements there affects positively my ability to hit all my other goals, or the opposite. If I have this one thing that if I push it closer to the goal, it's making all the other things worse or harder to do, then I want to be really careful about that. Right? So that's just kind of, again, one... The correlation matrix is just one piece of that tool, actually. And that's one way it can help. Yes, sir?
How often is the house of quality used? I've never heard of it before, but is this something that corporations use?
Yeah, it's pretty commonly used. So have you heard of Six Sigma? So Six Sigma, Lean Six Sigma, GE was one of the big pushers of that. Our PhD program actually pushes towards that as well. You'll hear some of the terminology being a little bit different, but the core concepts are identical. Other questions? Okay. That's house of quality. That's really about maybe the core problem understanding tool. Okay. Getting at who are my customers, what do they want, and then what can I measure or test about a design to know whether it's satisfying those customer requirements or not. Okay. If I thought really clearly about what I can measure or test, I probably also have some idea about what I want those measurements to be. Or what those measurements need to be, right? So that's where we get to design or engineering specifications. I can take my engineering characteristics, all these things I said I need to measure about the design, and say, well, hey, I can set numerical targets. If I can measure this thing, what do I want that measurement to be? What should it be in order to be most successful? These specifications are numerical targets. And I'll stress as well that any possible design that satisfies that set of customer requirements has to satisfy. Okay? For your spaghetti tower, it didn't matter what the spaghetti tower itself looked like, it still had to fit on a piece of paper. It still had to use less than 4 ounces of spaghetti. Okay? You'll see these specs are derived from standards sometimes. Engineering characteristics, how we're talking about it right now, and then engineering analysis. You'll see specs, design specs, grouped into categories. This is just some of them. This full list is also in your book. It'll be in the notes later. Don't necessarily worry about copying it down right now. You want to group specs by these things, though. Okay. The spec sheet looks something like this. Again, this is a very short one, so it'll fit on the slide. This can be multiple pages long, and should be probably multiple pages long, even for the designs in this class. Okay. The requirements sorted by those categories I just showed go down the middle part. Okay. For each of those requirements, there's this D/W column. And we're going to say this is demand or wish or demand or want, D or W. Okay. So there are some specs that are demands. If this spec is not satisfied, the product is dead. If your spaghetti tower had a base that didn't fit inside a piece of paper, it's not a feasible design to solve that problem. It's an illegal design within the context of that contest. Right? If you design a cup of coffee that tastes really great but is half poison, that doesn't work. Right? So you have some demand probably on a spec sheet for your cup of coffee that's less than whatever parts per million poison. That's a demand. If it doesn't meet that, it's dead, as it's not feasible design. A want or wish, and quite often for demand, you'll also have an associated want or wish. That's kind of a target that you really want to hit. Okay. So my spaghetti tower has to fit within a 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. Maybe I want it to fit by 8 by 11 or 8 by 10.5. I want to get a half-inch border all the way around, kind of buffer zone. So the demand is that it fits within an 8.5 by 11 footprint. The want or wish is that it's 8 by 10.5 footprint. Okay. Or I might have a demand from the FDA that my coffee has less than whatever parts per million poison. I probably have a want or wish that it has 0 parts per million poison. Okay. So you will have and should have specs that have demands and wishes, wants or wishes that are associated. Okay. The right-hand column, you have what's the source of the requirement. So for our coffee example, there's some FDA regulation on parts per million that you can have in coffee. You would want to cite that regulation over here. Right. If you're dealing with parts that workers have to use, there's probably some OSHA guidelines in terms of how loud the thing can be and things like that. Right, ergonomic standards. You want to cite these over here so that someone, maybe you get promoted, you're CEO now, someone's working on a product, they're looking at this spec sheet for the next iteration. I don't know where this spec came from, they can look over here. Oh, I know I can go to FDA standard, whatever, whatever, and see where that came from. Okay. Also, we'll list who is responsible for ensuring that spec is satisfied. This becomes a little bit more important as your team grows. And the organization of the spec sheet becomes more important as the team grows as well. Right. So, for example, there's a whole category of specs that are safety related. You might have a sub-team within your group that's dedicated towards ensuring the product's safe to use. So they're responsible for making sure that safety, those safety specs are met. So you can have who's responsible there. And like the House of Quality, this thing should be getting updated pretty regularly, right, as you understand the problem better, as you're iterating on your design. So you will have also the date of the last change over in that left-hand column. Okay. So some FDA changes their regulation. I need to change my spec and then indicate the date that it was changed. That's the general layout of the spec sheet. Questions?
So you'd like me to erase and then rewrite it?
Yeah, so what you will have is you'll do a new version. So you see the top right, there's kind of an issue date, right? So you have a new issue date and then date of change. And quite often companies will have, and my lab kind of does this, basically version control. So it's not spec sheet underscore version 2.7, but there's a formalized system for knowing what version things are on. And the disk got updated.
Would you want to document what caused changes?
Yeah, quite often you'll do that as well. So there might be, you guys are probably used to it. You see an update to a piece of software on your phone or whatever. You know, change. It's a change log, effectively, on this date. You'll see it on our syllabus, on our schedule. I do the same thing. On this date, this is what changed. And quite often, who made that change? So they know who to come yell at when it's wrong. Questions about the spec sheet? Other questions? Okay. Again, like the House of Quality, a lot of the utility in this comes in thinking really clearly about what the specs are. And what numbers, these are all numerical targets, right? So what number should go here and why? Okay. So when that's clear, and what I want to point out to you guys, in the spec sheet, you know, you guys are still pretty early in your career. You might not have a lot of experience, a lot of engineering analysis skill quite yet. Okay. Some of these specs are going to be your best guesses based on that at this point in your career. There needs to be engineering analysis behind these as your career moves forward. This is 1.7 meters a second because this and that. Right? It can't be we just guessed that was the right speed. Okay. So each one of these specs in kind of a professional setting has analysis that backs up why that spec is what it is, why that number might be what it is. And the same thing will come true when we look at evaluating designs. The other thing I want to point out here is that these specs will often start kind of broad. They still need to be numerical. And then as you learn more about the process, as you develop more knowledge within the design problem you're working on, they get refined down. Okay. So the first version of these specs, you know, the ones I do can be back-of-the-envelope high school physics calculations of what forces need to be applied and speeds there are and things like that. Right? But then I can go and do full dynamic simulations and get better approximations of what the numbers need to be. But it is numbers the whole time. I start building, even with the back-of-the-envelope high school physics-type calculations, I can start building out the bounds on what the problem is. And that's valuable. Right, you guys have the skill to do that. So that's at minimum the kind of specs we'll look at for you guys. Right, you're gonna have to, your device on the final project's gonna have to move towards the center of the track. Well, it needs to get there in this amount of time so I can figure out what speed it needs to move at. Right? You guys can do that, I hope. I have confidence you can do that. Okay. Spec sheet. Again, we want to take every engineering characteristic. Okay. Engineering characteristics, things we can measure or test about the design. Look at that and say, okay, what do we want that measurement to be in the ideal? Where does that measurement have to be successful? Okay. So we take our user wanted, we can measure uptime about the design. We take uptime, we want uptime greater than 99.99% of the time. Okay. We might have an engineering characteristic, time between required maintenance stops. Okay. Oh, we want, and that might translate into a spec that's maintenance less than one time per year. We might have measure the number of assembly steps for my spaghetti tower. Okay. And this might say, well, actually, what the spec is, I want the number of assembly steps less than 15. Okay. I can measure the top speed about a design. You know, I'm designing a car or something. Well, I want the top speed greater than 160. Or I want the acceleration less than 3 seconds. Right. This is an engineering characteristic. That's a specification. Okay. On the left side of those, something I can measure. Engineering spec, what do I want that measurement to be? Okay. Battery life in hours at 75% low. That's an engineering characteristic about my smartphone or whatever we're talking about. Well, I want greater than 5-hour life at that low, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. Then you take each one of those, right? Determine if it's a demand or a wish want. And then for every demand, think about explicitly, is there also an associated wish or want? Okay. Again, revisit this regularly. Any other questions? Okay, so on Thursday, we're going to talk about what I also consider part of the specification development. It's called a function tree. We're going to spend a little bit more time on that than we have in the past. It's one that tends to confuse folks. And then talk about once we have that, those functionality, we have these specs, what do we do to figure out what design of ours is the best one, what concept of ours is the best? So conceptual evaluation on Thursday. Sound good? All right.